thinking? More signs of craziness? As in more than what you've told me? Yeah, there were. This is when I confirmed that he wasn't really filming his vacation on the cruise ship. He was just filming me. I only got to see the cruise video one time, but yeah, it was real stalkerish. It's creepy. He was hiding the camera under a jacket, following me around. The camera was pointed at my booty a lot. It was crazy. But you gotta understand my mind at the time. I'm thinking this is God's work. Like, this is exactly what I asked God for. Even if he's not all that physically attractive, I can live without that. What's important is his soul. To me, his soul seemed like it cared about me, and it cherished me a lot. After that, I flew back to California. He told me, I'm coming to California, and we're going to have the best. You're going to have the best life, the best everything. The next week, he came out to L.A., and he brought me a Dodge Charger. You can't be driving in no Geo Metro. You drive this. Great. Cool. I can live with that sort of life. Hey. He drove a Dodge Charger from Atlanta to L.A. for me. Honestly, part of the reason I was looking past the craziness was my own arrogance in a way. I had started thinking I had the best coochie in the world. I was thinking, my pussy is the best pussy ever. There must be midgets in my pussy doing magic tricks on his dick or something. Like, no man had ever brought me cars from another state, so it must be something about me. Turns out, he had a tracking device on the car. He was tracking everywhere I went. He was just watching me. That's why he brought it. He also had one of his former police partners, one of his buddies who lived in L.A. watching me. So the dude was following me around when he wasn't in town. I didn't know any of this. I found all this out later on. Just checking to see what I was doing is what he said. He said he was doing it to keep me safe, but really he was a stalker. I could have seen the signs then if I wanted to. For example, one day I didn't answer the phone at all. I just didn't feel like talking, and he just popped up in my house. I thought that was unusual. I kept telling myself that he did this because he cared about me. But really, he was controlling me. That's what it was about. Not love, not caring. It was about control. But I either didn't know any better or I wasn't willing to see it. I looked past his issues so I could have a man in my life who did things for me. Even though we were engaged, he formally proposed to me at a comedy club. I was on stage and he was going to come up to the stage and give me the ring, but then he got scared for some reason. When the show was over, when nobody was around, he was like,
"Will you marry me?"
"Yeah, but why did you wait till nobody was around?" All of my friends was like, "He's ugly, Tiffany. You can do better. Like, he's fat. He's ugly. Yeah, he really love you and stuff, but he's whack. Like, you could do better." I thought they were all haters. I just thought they were jealous or whatever because he drove a car out for me. He gave me a ring, and he was giving me an allowance, too. I thought that was super dope. That's how you know I was stupid. He was giving me like $100 a week, and I thought that was so fucking awesome. I thought that was the shit. Not that I needed it, but it meant a lot to me. Because to me, if a man cares about you, he gives you money. He works hard for his money, so if he gives it to you, he cares. So even though all my friends hated him, I just thought they were jealous. And none of them knew all the crazy stuff, at least not yet. But crazy can't hide forever. He moved out to L.A. after that. He told me he had 3 kids, and he brought his son with him, the 8-year-old. So now we are living in my 1-bedroom apartment, me, him, and this 8-year-old. I did not like that at all. We only lived there for a month, and then he got this house, and the house was great, but it was far. It was like 70 miles outside of L.A. in Wildomar. I thought he was doing it for me. He wasn't. It was to keep me away from everybody and make me feel like I didn't want to do comedy anymore. But I still kept doing comedy. I just did it in Wildomar. I just found places out there. I did the casino and stuff like that, did shows in San Diego. That shit used to piss him off.
You don't need to do this comedy stuff. I'm making money. You don't need it.
Then as soon as he was saying that, he would lose his job. Then he was doing detective work on the side, or he'd get laid off from another job. And so then I had to be supplementing everything. So I started booking movies and all these other really good paying gigs. Then as soon as we got married, he had all kind of demands on me around taking care of his son.
You need to go to the PTA meetings and you need to pick the kid up and take him to his practice.
Then I was like, can he go home to his mom for 6 months so I can learn how to just be a wife for a little bit? Can I learn how to do that part for a little bit? Then can he come back and then I can assume the mommy role? Because this is stressful. I love that little boy, but I was instantly being thrown into the mommy role. And honestly, it made me feel like I was 9 years old again, taking care of somebody, trying to do my thing too. I was trying to learn how to be a wife and be a loving partner in all this also. I was confused as fuck. That was a lot for me because I was also trying to do comedy. I was trying to do this for real. And then he told me he don't want me talking about his son on stage. But his son is funny as hell. He's doing really crazy funny stuff. And I really want to talk about it. And he tells me don't talk about him. Then he tried to tell me not to talk about him either. But my whole world was those two. What else am I going to talk about? There was all kinds of stress like that. Basically, he was trying to shrink my world down until it was nothing but him and his needs. But I wasn't about to let that happen, and I didn't see what he was doing at the time. Then the relationship got violent. I was drunk one night, and I just kept saying over and over, I want to eat. I want to eat. I want to eat. When we get to the house, I can't wait till we get to the house. Oh, I'm going to eat that cabbage that you cooked. Oh, man, it's going to be so good. I'm about to tear that cabbage up. Only a drunk person could be excited about eating cabbage. So, you know, I was drunk as shit. I honestly don't remember how it happened, but we were in the kitchen and I was trying to heat up the cabbage and he choked the shit out of me. He told me I needed to shut up and listen. I talked too motherfucking much and he choked me. Now, we've all been around drunk people we've wanted to choke the fuck out of. And if I was raving about eating cabbage, then I was probably in that category. But still, it's different to want to choke a drunk person and to do it to your wife. When he was choking me at first, I was like, what the hell? Like, I could not even believe I was being choked. Then my survival instincts kicked in. I grabbed the pan on the stove next to me, and I hit him with it. He dropped his hands and staggered a bit. Now that I had my senses and I could breathe, the rage came. I threw a vicious right hand and punched him in his eye. That staggered him more. I guess he didn't expect me to fight back. I grabbed the first thing I could find, which was some pet spray stuff for the carpet for pets. You know, I sprayed that in his face. Apparently that shit did not feel good because he started covering his eyes and screaming. Now, I didn't stick around after that. I just wanted to get the fuck out the house. But as I was running, somehow he caught me and tackled me and sat on me. He closed the door and just sat on me. He sat on me for about 45 minutes until I was just not moving or whatever. He sat on me so long because I kept fighting. I'd be still for a second and just like, bam, you know, flip out and try to get out of there.
You need to listen to me. You're disrespectful. You're ornery.
And I was like, but you picked me. You married me. You came for me. I didn't come looking for you. If you don't like who I am, why are you fucking here? Let me up and I'll go.
Just shut the fuck up.
But I wouldn't shut up. That ain't my thing. Shutting up? That ain't me. He sat on me and lectured me, telling me how fucked up I was as a person or whatever for like an hour. Finally, he got off of me and he dragged me into the guest room and locked me in the guest room.
You're not coming out till you come. Bitch, you stay in the holding tank.
I was a prisoner in my own home. Ladies, a quick word of advice. That shit is a felony. I did not know it at the time, but someone locking you away without your consent is straight up kidnapping, a felony. I should have just called the police, but I didn't know that. He kept me in there till the next day.
Are you ready to talk and have a conversation like a regular adult?
Yeah, let's talk. He opened the door, and I walked straight out to the bedroom, got my suitcase, and I started packing my shit. You can talk to me while I pack my shit. I'm leaving. I'm out of here. I'm going to my grandma's house.
Not in my car. You're not taking my car.
That's okay. I'll take my Geo Metro. That thing barely worked, but I wouldn't get rid of my Geo. I still got my apartment. I'll go back to my apartment with my ornery ass.
No, you don't get to go nowhere. I'm out of here. I'm leaving.
He just got in the car and left. That was easy. Then his mama called me, and she was like, why did you send my son home? What the hell? I didn't send him nowhere. Your son choked me. Your son sat on me. Your son locked me up. Your son is abusive. I took pictures of my throat and stuff and sent them to her.
Oh, you're a great actress. You're a wonderful makeup artist.
I ain't no makeup artist. Did you see my makeup at the wedding? I did that myself, and it was horrible. So knock that shit off. I ended up taking him back. He apologized, sort of, and sent me gifts, and I felt terrible about everything, and we got back together. I felt like maybe it was my fault, because I was intoxicated. Maybe I wasn't listening. Maybe I was doing too much wrong. So maybe it was my fault. That's how I felt at the time.
I know, you're right. I should not have taken him back.
It's easy to sit here now and evaluate this and see I made the wrong decision. I know that. But it wasn't easy for me at the time. A lot of women who suffer physical violence go through this. You get in a bad relationship and you don't, or you can't, find a way out. It's easy to talk about leaving him. It's hard to do it. Part of you really thinks it will get better, and he said it would. Obviously, it didn't get better. One night, at the Laugh Factory, a bunch of my friends from high school came in and saw the show and had a great time. Afterwards, we went next door, and they had drinks. I didn't have any drinks because I had to drive 70 miles home. I just danced around. I got home about 2:30 a.m., and I hadn't called him to tell him I was going to be out with them or anything. He was very upset.
Where the fuck was you at?
I was with my high school friends. They showed up to the show to surprise me. Man, it would have been so great if you had been there. I was all smiling and happy. He just lifted me up off the ground by my throat.
Don't be standing here lying to me, smiling in my face, telling me you were dancing with some bitches. You a motherfucking liar.
I'm not a liar. You can look on Facebook. The pictures are on Facebook.
He was choking the shit out of me. My eyes like went red, and I was just looking at him. I didn't try to hit him back or nothing. I was just like, I couldn't believe it. I thought to myself, this is how I'm going to die. I'm going to die because I was having fun with my classmates. That's what I was thinking. Then he just dropped me.
Anytime you just change your mind about what you're going to do, when you get sidetracked, you call me, you tell me where the fuck you at, because I need to know. It's my job to protect you. You have to tell me where you're at and what the fuck you're doing, because I have to protect you. It's my job as your husband to protect you.
But I was safe. I felt safe. I didn't need you. I don't need you to protect me. I slept in the guest room for like 2 weeks after that. I thought I was going to leave, but I didn't. Once I had taken him back after the first incident, I guess that was it. I accepted that this was a part of our relationship. A few months later, I had to go to Montreal to do the Just for Laughs Comedy Festival. I was scheduled to be there for 2 weeks. I had a great time the first week. The second week, he came to visit me. He would not leave my side, and all I wanted to do was hang out with all the comedians down in the lobby. We'd be talking and cracking jokes and stuff up to like 3, 4 in the morning, just hanging out, laughing and talking. Dom Herrera was there, and he and Dom were talking. And he basically spent an hour telling Dom everybody's fake and phony, saying stuff like he knows they're all trying to fuck me and all this stuff. And I was like, what if they are trying to fuck me? I'm not going to fuck them. They would have to, like, gang rape me to get me. Like, I'm not going to do that.
Yeah, bullshit, bullshit. You probably like it.
Then Tom Green comes over, and he is talking to me and making me laugh so hard. I was just laughing and laughing, and that shit was making my ex-husband so mad. He grabbed me by the collar, and he was like, it's time to go to the room now. In front of everybody, just snatched me by my shirt and pulled me to the elevator and threw me in. Joe Coy was in the elevator, and I think Adam Ray was, too. And Joe Coy was like, you all right, Tiff? Is everything okay? Are you good? Are you good?
She's fine. She's just fine. You all stop fucking talking to her. Getting tired of everybody talking to her motherfucking ass.
I'm okay. Hey, guys, I'm okay. I'm okay, guys. I'm all right. I was just trying to make a silly face, trying to be cool or whatever. Anything to avoid the mortifying embarrassment I was feeling. Once we got to our hotel room, he was so quick. He snatched me by my neck and slammed me into the wall.
Don't you ever embarrass me like that again. What the fuck is wrong with you?
I had a knot on the side of my head from where he slammed me into the wall. And all these marks on my throat where he had dug his nails in. I had enough.
Look, straight up, you need to leave. I'm going to call the police on you. You're going to go to jail in Canada. I'm going to call the police.
He refused to leave, so I go to grab the phone. He rips it out the wall.
You really need to leave or I'm going to call the police. I haven't been to the police before, but these nail marks on my throat, I'm going to get a knot on the side of my head. You need to leave. You really need to go back to California and get the fuck up out of here before because I'm calling the police.
I ain't going nowhere. I ain't going no motherfucking where.
Then I just got really quiet, really calm, just like curled up in the corner, just got really quiet. I let him yell at me. He went into the bathroom. I bolted out the door down the stairs. Now I was running around the streets of Montreal. I was running past the other comedians, full on running. They were calling out, yo, Tiff, where you going? What you running for? What you running for? I wasn't about to stop and talk to them. I was too embarrassed, too scared, too upset, too fucked up to talk to anyone. I needed help, but I wasn't about to ask for it or take any. I roamed the streets of Montreal till like 8 o'clock in the morning, just walking around, just roaming. Anything I saw that looked like him, I ran down another street. I was tripping. When I got back to the room, about 9 o'clock in the morning, he was gone. All his stuff was gone. During this time in my life, I had dedicated myself to becoming a better wife. So I had started studying with Jehovah's Witnesses. He liked that.
Yeah, I'll never be a Jehovah's Witness, but you should be one. Because they know how to be submissive. They're submissive to their men. They do whatever their men tell them to do, so that's what you should do.
The Jehovah's Witnesses do Bible studies on Skype. When I got back to the hotel room at 9 in the morning, they hit me up on Skype for our regular Bible study. The Jehovah's Witness was like, what happened to you? I hadn't even looked at myself. And when I saw myself on the Skype, I saw there was a knot on my forehead. There were all these welt marks across my throat. Oh, man, my husband came out here. We got into it. He choked me. Jehovah's Witnesses do not believe in divorce, not for any reason. They were all like, you need to get a divorce. You have to get out of this. Then the lady leading the Bible study calls her husband. Her husband's an elder, but she gets him on Skype right away. Look at Tiffany. Look at her. She needs to get a divorce, don't you think? He's an elder. He is big time. At first, he started off with the normal lines. Nobody gets divorced. We could talk through this. You could work it out. And she was like, look at her face. He got really quiet. Then he said in a solemn voice, you have to get a divorce. When you come back from Montreal, you're staying with us.
You have to get a divorce. You cannot be in a relationship like this. This is not going to work, Tiffany. This man is not godly. They started reading all these Bible scriptures to me about it. I was crying and stuff, and I had a show in a few hours. I was like, I really need to take a nap. I got a show. I went to sleep. I just woke up confused about where I was. I had forgotten that I had got my ass whipped by my husband. My reflection in the mirror was a shock. I put makeup on my neck and pulled my bangs over the knot on my forehead. When I got to the stage, the lights were unexpectedly bright. They were hot. When my makeup started running, everyone there could tell I had been beaten. They could see the marks. But everybody knew already. They didn't need to see the marks. Those comedians around the elevator and lobby told everybody. Everywhere I went, people were asking me, "You all right? We heard you got beat. You okay? You need help?" I told everyone I was good. But I wasn't good. I was in a bad way. All those people there wanted to help, but I couldn't receive their help. All I could do was push them away and then go back to the dude that was abusing me. Why? I asked myself that a lot. I don't know the answer. Maybe because I didn't want to be a quitter. I felt like it was my first time making a commitment in front of God, and getting married was a big deal to me. I'd never been baptized or anything like that, so this was the biggest commitment that I've ever made in my life, and I didn't want to be a quitter. I wanted to find a way to make it work. I didn't want to seem like I just gave up. Even though I got beat up, even though the Jehovah's Witnesses were telling me to get out, even though a different pastor from the Baptist church was also telling me to get out, it was like God was sending me all these messages to get the fuck out, but I still couldn't. Maybe it was just that I didn't know any other way to be loved. Maybe this was the only man that I had ever thought truly loved me. Maybe I just couldn't leave that, no matter how bad it was. I don't know. It's still hard to think about this. On some level, I felt like if I loved him enough, I could heal him. I could heal him from being mad, from being so vicious. It was like those Twilight movies. It was the same thing for me. I can keep him from drinking human blood. I can bring him deer blood. I can heal him. I just have to love him the right way. I just have to figure out his language, learn how to speak his language. I even went and talked to his mama and I asked her, "How did you show him that you loved him?" "Girl, once I burned him with the hot comb because he was messing around my butt." "Okay, so I need to burn him with the hot comb?" "Ah, no. He was just poking me. It was an accident. See, he was a terrible child, though. I had to lock him in the house and tell him don't touch nothing until I get back from work." That was not good advice. So how do I do this? I just really wanted to be a great wife. Really, I wanted to be a better wife than my mom was. I wanted to be supportive, not a pushover, but actually take care of the kids, actually take care of people. If I say I'm going to do something, to do it, to have it done, just better than how she was to me. I wanted to clean the house, make sure my man don't have no roaches in his house. My mom had roaches in the house, okay? We would never have a roach issue. Thank you very much. So I recommitted, and things got worse at home. He set down new rules for me. "You're not allowed to get text messages or phone calls after 10 o'clock because that's disrespecting our marriage. I don't care if your grandma can't call you after 10 p.m. I don't care if somebody died. That's disrespecting our marriage." I went along with that. I made everybody talk to me between 9 and 5 o'clock business hours. I legit told that to people. Even though I'm a comedian, and sometimes clubs would call and be like, "Hey, can you come and do this spot?" I didn't answer the phone. I didn't talk to them. I told them, "I can't do it. I can't do it. If you don't call me during business hours, I can't talk." Finally, the tide started to turn. I started to see the light. But it wasn't because of anything physically abusive he did to me. More abuse did come, but the last straw was something very different. One night,
We were driving away from the Laugh Factory, and he got a text message. His phone was in the center console, and it popped up on the screen. "Lisa," it said, "why you be lying?" I saw that, and I knew, before I even knew, I knew. And I just said, "Who is Lisa?" He was like,
"What are you talking about? You seeing things."
"No, no, no. Who is Lisa? And why does she say you be lying?"
"You tripping. You seeing things. Something wrong with your eyes."
"Oh, now I'm blind?"
"You know you can't read."
"No, I can read now. And this says Lisa, why you be lying?"
"No, you tripping."
I grabbed the phone and I started texting her. I sent, "Why?" She texted back in 2 seconds like she's a professional text messenger and said, "Because you said you was giving me money to get my nails and hair done tonight." I text back and I read my message out loud. "Well, you know my wife be spending up my money." As I text back, he got so mad he grabbed my head and pushed my head into the window. He was trying to get the phone and I was pulling the phone back. "Nigga, what is wrong with you? Like, what the fuck is wrong with you? What did I tell you about putting your motherfucking hands on me? Get your motherfucking hands off of me." Then he pulled over and he took the phone from me. "Why don't you want her to know that your wife's spending your money? What's up with that? What's up with that? What's up with that? What's up with that?" When we black women repeat our words, you know shit is bad. Well, shit was bad.
"You need to shut the fuck up."
"No, you need to shut the fuck up. I told you to keep your motherfucking hands off of me. And you put your hands on me, you know what the fuck's gonna happen. When we get where we gotta go, somebody's gonna get their ass beat and it ain't gonna be me." I poked him in the side of the head. When I poked him in the side of the head, he went ballistic. "I'm not afraid to fight no one. I'll pull your ass out the car." "Pull me out the car, motherfucker!" He waited until we got home, and then it was basically an MMA fight. Except he was big and trained in hand-to-hand combat by the police academy, and I was small and fighting for my life. He choked me a bunch of times. I scratched at him. I ran from him. All of that. I hit him. But my punches didn't do shit. He's a big guy. I hit him as hard as I could with the pool stick a few times. I found that in the back of his car. He grabbed me by the throat and threw me into a shelf at one point. It was like being tossed around by the Incredible Hulk. I thought my eye socket was broke. My lip was busted. I was tore up. I'm glossing over all the details because that don't matter. The point was, the man whipped me, okay? He beat my ass. But now that shit was different. I was done taking this. I was ready to commit murder. I was ready to kill. I got in the car and left the house. I drove to the police station. First, the police station was closed when I got there. I'm like, what the fuck? How can a police station be closed? They had an emergency phone outside the front door, so I picked it up. "Yes, may I help you?" And I was like, "I'm about to kill somebody. I'm about to commit murder." "Excuse me? I'm out here at the police station. Y'all need to lock me up because I'm about to kill my husband. If y'all don't lock me up right now, there's going to be a dead body." "Where are you?" "I'm outside the police station. Y'all can lock me up because I'm about to make a murder."
"Don't go anywhere. I'm going to have one of the officers come out."
The policeman come out. And he's like, "Ma'am, what happened to you? Are you okay?"
"I'm fine. I'm just fine."
"Do you need us to call you an ambulance?"
"I'm just fine. I'm about to go make murder."
"You're gonna what?"
"Make a murder."
"Okay, calm down. Tell us what happened." So I tell him and his partner what happened. The whole time they're looking me up and down.
"Okay, you do realize that you're very damaged."
"I'm fine. I'm just fine. I'm telling you, you need to put me in a jail cell because I hit that motherfucker with a pool stick and I'm going to go back and kill him. If you don't lock me up, I'm going to commit murder. I'm going to go to the hood, get a gun, and I'm going to kill that motherfucker."
"Ma'am, you need an ambulance. You're hurt." Then the other police officer pulled out his camera, started taking pictures of my face and my throat. He asked to see my arms. They were all messed up with cuts and scrapes. I was like, I didn't even know that happened. Look, I'm going to kill that motherfucker. The police officer was like, calm down. Are you hurting anywhere else? My back hurt when he slammed me in the ground. Let me see your back. When they pulled my shirt up, it was all black and blue. They took pictures of that. Then they had an ambulance come. I got in an argument with the paramedics. He was like, we need to take you to the hospital. No, I need to go to jail because I'm going to go crazy on this motherfucker. I'm fine. Your blood pressure's really high. You need to calm down. I don't give no fucks. I'm going to kill this man. Finally, the police decided to go to my house. Look. We have to go see him. If he's injured, if he has damage on him, then you may end up in jail. You might as well take me there now. You might as well just start taking my fingerprints now because I'ma kill that motherfucker. So they went to the house. The police told me later that he was in the house with the door wide open. He was just sitting there with his shirt off watching the football game. He knew they were coming. The police arrested him because all he had was one bite mark on his wrist. I don't even remember biting him. He didn't have no other marks on him, nothing. No, officer, I hit him with the pool stick, y'all. It should be a big old bruise across his back. I hit him with the pool stick as hard as I could. Ma'am, he was fine. They arrested him. Then his whole family started calling me. They asked me to bail him out. His mama was like, he wants to know if you'll bail him out. I'm not bailing him out. No, I'm getting a restraining order on him and everything. Okay, you crazy if you think I'm gonna bail him out. Then the next day I was hurting so bad. My back, everything. I could barely walk. I started bleeding like crazy from my vagina. When the blood started coming, I knew. I mean, I didn't know I was pregnant before, but now I did. I was having a straight up miscarriage. I don't know if it was from the beating or the stress, but it happened. I guess God decided to send me a real fucking clear sign this time, didn't he? That was pretty much the end of that. I filed for divorce and moved back into my old place. Let's just all pause here and take a breath. Maybe get a drink. Rest up. Because the story is not done. And we are about to dive back into some intensity. Okay, you rested? Here we go. I left him, but I don't know what the fuck was wrong with me because I still wanted my husband back. Even though I had a restraining order and everything, it was still a part of me like, I think we can work through this. My friend had the same reaction you were having. Girl, you crazy. This motherfucker almost killed you. Leave him alone. I thought he had to see how much he hurt me. He saw how messed up I was. We had love. He'd never do that again. I know he can be a better person. We just gotta get some counseling. We can get through this. We got to do this together. We just got to work together. No relationship is easy. It's just work. We just got to work at it. I didn't act on these thoughts. I just had them. All through the divorce, which was quick, easy, and painless. And afterwards, after the divorce, everything sucked. I was single now, but I didn't want to be out there dating. Dudes were trying to talk to me, but I just wanted my husband. That's all I wanted. During this time that we were apart, his son went into foster care. Why that happened isn't a part of my story, but it did happen. He was in the foster system for 6 months. This really hit me hard. I was in the foster care system. I knew how terrible it was. Even though I was divorced from his dad, I was actively trying to help get him out of there. I wanted him to be with his mom or even with me. I even helped his mom to fly out, and I was driving her around. When I think back about it, I was so fucking stupid with that. That whole situation drove me back toward my ex. It's just my opinion, but I'm convinced he used that situation, that his son was in foster care, and the guilt he knew that would cause with me to try and get me back to him. He knew I'd been in foster care. He knew I would not be able to resist helping his son and that it would bring me back around him more. And it worked. I won't get into more details because you will just start yelling at me like a crazy person. We got married. Again. We got a bigger house, a better house. And the one good thing was that me and his son were super close. His son knew what I had been through with foster care and all this stuff. He was loving on me and everything. And honestly, it was okay for a while. He wasn't hitting me or none of that. Then he started acting really weird. He started being on the phone for like 2-3 hours at a time, ducking off into his office, running into the backyard to talk, being real secretive and stuff. I tried to have positive thoughts. I go on the computer and look through our wedding photos to remember the good times. And then one time, I was going through the wedding photos, and there was a photo of a butt-naked chick sucking on her titties in the middle of our wedding photos. That led to a big fight, not the physical, just yelling. I was working on a movie then, and I called him the next day, but couldn't find him. I came home because I had been a little mean to him in the morning. So I thought, I'll come home during my lunch break. I'll butter him up like, I'm sorry for being mean to you this morning. But he was not at home when I arrived. Instead, there was an eviction notice on our door. When I finally saw him, I was like, why hasn't the rent been paid? Why are we getting an eviction notice? And he was like, because I have a child. I've been talking to her every day. I have to pay $2,500 a month. They're garnishing my check. That's where the money is going. That's why he was asking me for $1,000 every month. He said it was going towards the rent. Turns out he was paying child support. He had another child who was 11, a little girl, who he basically abandoned because he didn't like her mom. It's funny, because a few months before, his mom was at the house, and she was telling me that he got a daughter, but she was drunk. And he was like, you can't listen to her. She's drunk. Don't listen to what she's saying. But I should have listened. I had a real issue about this. I had to let him know. Why would you do that? You found my dad for me, and you know how I feel about that. You would just abandon your child? You just let her be out there like that? And then you didn't even tell me that you reconnected with her or that you was paying child support or that you got a court order garnishing your check. You didn't tell me none of that. He didn't have nothing to say. I was like, fuck this shit. I'm done. I'm out. So I moved out. I got a divorce, and this time it stuck. We're still divorced, and we ain't never, ever, ever, never, ever getting back together. I know what you're thinking. This was your breaking point and not the ass whippings? It seems like a really small thing relatively compared to everything else. But the thing is, I couldn't be with anybody or potentially have a child with somebody who could abandon his child. That was my personal boundary, and I had finally found it. He had trouble letting go. He kept texting, I want my wife back. He'd be calling my friends. To this day, he still calls my friends. And he's like, how's my wife doing? I miss her. She's still my wife. Even though we're divorced, she's still my wife. No, we ain't divorced. We twice divorced. The long road to comedy success. I don't want to make comedy sound easy because it is not. After I got back into comedy and got my first paid gig, The Lesbian Bomb Show, I started doing a lot of paid shows all over L.A. Occasionally, I was getting out of town to Orange County or Colton or something like that, or far off, like Lancaster. Back then, I started considering a 2-hour drive to be a serious traveling gig. I wouldn't now, but then I was driving a little Geo Metro that sounded like a lawnmower. Okay, sound like this. Riding that shit for 2 hours and feel like you done crossed America in a covered wagon. Right as I was getting going with comedy, I kind of blew up in the bar mitzvah scene. So I was traveling all over the country doing bar mitzvahs that paid better than my comedy gigs, but comedy was my thing. Then I got on the show Who's Got Jokes, and that helped my career a lot. It was my first time ever being on television doing stand-up, and I won the first round of competition. I had to go to Atlanta. I had never done comedy in Atlanta before. I only partied in Atlanta, so I really didn't have a feel for the comedy scene. I didn't know how they even felt about women comedians or anything. I didn't have a clue, okay? Not one clue. That shit matters a lot in comedy. And because I was not ready for the second round in Atlanta, I lost bad, like real bad. It was in the Civic Center. There was like 3,000 people there. And it was my first time being in front of that many people. And right as I walked out on stage, I realized, Tiffany, there are motherfucking cameras here. I was just so nervous. It was horrible. At the time, I had this goofy bit about the song Chicken Noodle Soup. You remember that song, Chicken Noodle Soup? I would make fun of that song, do this goofy dance. I did that bit, but I screwed the timing up bad. I knew I had fucked up. It was so quiet in there, and nobody made a sound. And then some man just went, boo, just out of nowhere. He didn't even yell. It was more dismissive. And because none of the other 3,000 people were making a sound, it echoed all around that hall. I looked into the audience, and all I could say was one word into that mic, real slow and serious. Niggas. That's all I could say. I couldn't get nothing else out of my mouth. I got disqualified. This wasn't a black comedy club, and you can't say that shit on TV. I was done. I failed. It was bad. First, I cried. I cried outside in the back of the Civic Center hard. Then I started talking to myself and was like, you just bombed in front of all them people, all over TV. People are going to be able to see that all over the world. Then I responded to myself, yeah, people going to see me though, all over the world. Then my daddy going to see me, and then he going to come visit me, and then life is going to be great. I was trying to make myself feel better. I did feel better. Even though I bombed, getting to the second round helped my career. I did some stand-up on a couple of late-night TV shows, and then I ended up doing HBO's Def Comedy Jam. And then Def Comedy Jam started getting me other shows. Then I got a movie with Mike Epps, and that started getting me to colleges. It's kind of full circle because NYU wanted to charge me $30,000 a semester to attend, and now I'm going to all these different colleges, and they're paying me $2,000 to tell jokes for like 45 minutes. I felt like the dopest person in the world. I was getting paid to go to school. I wasn't really learning anything, but still. Once I got divorced, it was like the floodgates opened. The quality of my comedy just got way better. I had more time to focus on the art of it, and I was getting to know myself better. I was paying attention to my feelings about things. In stand-up, you do need to be having fun up there, like Richard Pryor said. But you have to know yourself well, too. You have to know when you make different faces or do different things, you get certain reactions. You start learning, and it's like playing a piano. You just know exactly what key to stroke. 'Cause really, with comedy, you're like fiddling with people's souls. You resonate on the same frequency as them, trying to get them to relate. To do that, you gotta put yourself out there. And in order to put yourself out there, you've got to have an idea of who you are and how people react to that. A lot of shows during this time stick out in my memory. I did a show in Arizona that was sold out. And the thing that I remember most about it was this lady sitting in the front row. She had this mean face. She was mean mugging me the first 10 to 15 minutes of my set. I made it my mission to make her laugh, and she would not laugh. It took me like 20 minutes to get her to laugh. And once she did laugh, though,
She laughed so hard that snot flew out her nose. And after that show, I went out and danced all night in celebration. I was so very proud of myself. Another time, in the middle of the show, the heel of my shoe broke. So I just did like 10 minutes about my shoe, how cheap the shoe was, why the shoe broke, all of that. When I came off the stage, this lady came up to me. You were amazing. I peed myself. So I was like, oh, thank you. How many kids do you have? You know, because women be peeing on themselves after they have babies. Lots of bad shows, too. I used to host this show at the San Manuel Casino every Wednesday night. And this one night, a girl was definitely intoxicated. She kept talking through everybody's set. And I was hosting the show. I kept saying, watch yourself. Let everybody enjoy this show, okay? You need to be quiet. Calm down. After the third comic, it started again. And it went off. The girl was like, yo, is this guy gonna be funny? Them others were stupid. And I was like, look, I'm getting tired of you talking to people all disrespectful. And if you don't quit, you're gonna have a problem. This drunk chick was like, bitch, you're gonna have a problem, bitch. I went the fuck off. She started gangbanging, throwing up signs and talking crazy. I started banging back. I ain't even from no gang, but I started representing my old hood. Don't trip. I'll beat your ass right now in front of everybody. And I looked at that heifer and I said, come on. Come on, beat my ass, bitch. Come on. At first, people were laughing because they thought I was just playing. Then I pulled my hair off. I took my shoes off. I took my earrings off. I balled up my fists, all furious, and I started praying in the microphone. Heavenly Father, give me the strength and the power to beat this girl down to the ground and teach her she ain't never supposed to be disrespectful to anybody because I give zero fucks, Lord. Just give me the power to whip her ass. All these things I ask in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen. I guess it was the way I said it because people stopped laughing. By the time she got close to the stage, security grabbed her. Then two big Samoan chicks who used to come every single week came down right behind her. And then these two other black girls that came all the time, they started wailing on her. Security had to drag the girl out to stop her from getting killed. I was yelling from the stage, bitch, get your ass beat before you even get to the stage. We beating your ass right now. Everything got settled, and I introduced the headliner. Poor guy. How's he gonna follow that shit? And I was so embarrassed I had to pray out loud in front of everybody for the Lord to give me the strength to whip a girl's ass. It was so unprofessional. I was so embarrassed that I went so ghetto so fast. When I left from the show, I walked to the police car in the parking lot. It was the car that was taking her to the station, and she was sitting in the back. She was like a dog with rabies, mad, face up against the glass, yelling and cussing. And I was like, damn, that was an hour ago and she's still crazy like that? Another bad night when I was supposed to host this April Fool's show in Atlanta. This place held 300 people and there was only like 30 people there. And they didn't pay me all my money. I only got half my money and I had the worst set ever. They had me thinking it was going to be so many people, but only 30 people showed up. And then half of them were my ex-husband's family members. So it was very embarrassing, and I don't embarrass easily, obviously. His mom was there, and she was just staring me in the face. It was a horrible show. Then I fell on stage. It was bad. I was wearing these pants that looked like leather, but weren't leather, and I was trying to do this physical joke where I squat down like a dance, right, and then I pop back up. I squatted down, and when I pop back up, I slip and fell. So then my little fake leather pants had a hole torn in the knee. I was trying to play it off like it wasn't bothering me. And then 2 minutes after I fell, I just kicked my shoes off. I just sat on the floor of the stage. I just gave up and I just talked from the floor. Just finished my time from there. I think I had 25 minutes left. It was horrible. No one laughed. People were rolling their eyes, looking at me crazy. Nobody was laughing. It was not good. Afterwards, my ex-husband came up to me. That's it.
You get a D on that set.
I was like, I give you an F on being a husband, so suck that. I did a bad show at Howard, a black college, with Tony Rock as the headliner, and me as the feature act. It was like 4,000 black students. I knew immediately this would be a problem. I had never seen that many young black people in one room, ever in my life. In one room? I never seen it. I don't know why that freaked me out, but it did. I just tried to stick to my material, just do my material. And it was not hitting, okay? I was too nervous and too scared, and they were not feeling me at all. At first, it was real quiet, because they were trying to figure it out. I don't even remember the first joke I hit them with, but it didn't hit at all. That was horrible. I did the punchline, and nobody laughed. I was just looking like a deer in headlights. This one dude from the audience spoke up. It's all right, though. You fine. At least you look good. You got that right. Some of y'all get a female comic and she don't be funny. And she be ugly, too. At least I ain't ugly. And then one of the girls sitting next to him said it in a real bitchy voice, Gabrielle Union style. Yeah, whatever. They were all on their phones, chilling there, giving attitude. That chick, she was just on her phone the whole time, just texting. She was sitting right in the front, so I could see her real good. If I saw her in the streets today, I would still know her right away. I was supposed to get paid $2,500 for that show. And when I came off the stage, they had already called my manager. My manager called me 15 minutes after I got off the stage, and he was like, they only want to give you $500 for the show. They said it was pretty bad. Yeah, it was pretty bad. I'm cool with that. I started laughing. I sucked. And I still got $500, though. I might have been embarrassed in front of 4,000 people, but I can pay my light bill, get groceries, gas money. I'm good. This is how I know I really sucked. There was an after party, and the student that was in charge of activities, when we first got there, before the show, he was like, yeah, you got to come to the after party. It's going to be so much fun. Tiffany, you definitely got to be there. Everybody going to be so excited to see you. And then after the show, the dude came and talked to Tony Rock. Yeah, the party going to be hype. We're going to pick you up from your hotel in about an hour. It's going to be great. We got bitches. We got booze. You're going to love it. And then he looked at me, rolled his eyes, and walked the fuck out of there. Tony was like, ooh, nigga. I was like, what? He was like, yep, your ass really was bad. You're not invited to the party, Tiff. He didn't say I couldn't come to the party. That look said you can't go to the party. Well, I don't want to go to the stupid-ass college party anyway. I'm an adult. How about that shit? A 20-year-old college dude didn't want me at his party. And then this little fat girl brought the money in. She handed everyone their envelopes, and she looked like she did not want to give me my envelope, my little $500. She did not want to give it to me. I know I did bad that night, but I got my money, though. Shoot. The politics of comedy. At this point, I was pretty established in comedy, and I know most of the people and players. But man, it was not like this at the beginning. I've got so many stories about what it's like coming up as a black woman in comedy in LA. Where do I start? Let me start with this one comedian. We'll call him Fats. I was volunteering at the youth center, and I ran into him there. He mentioned to me that he surfs. I was like, you surf? You don't surf. In case you don't know, Fats is fat as hell. 300 pounds at least.
Yes, I do. I surf.
Wow, I bet you look like a sea lion out there in that wetsuit and everything.
What you talking about? I got my own line of wetsuits and my own line of surfboards.
Is that plus size? That would make sense.
No, they ain't no damn plus size.
Wow, that's pretty amazing. You know, I surf too. I take the kids surfing every summer.
Oh, maybe I'll donate some surfboards. Hey, here's my number. Give me a call sometime.
So, I gave him a call. But every time I called him about the surfboards and stuff, he don't want to talk about that.
So think we can go to dinner? What do you like to do for fun?
You trying to date me or give me surfboards? I want the surfboards. I don't want to date you.
Yo, if you ain't trying to go out with me, I ain't trying to give out no surfboards.
I may have issues, but I ain't hooking up with no fat ass for free surfboards. Hell no. Then I ran into him at the comedy club, and he saw me get on stage and demolish it. Everything was different after that. Now he treats me like one of the homies, like I'm a fellow colleague. I love that. And now he's a good friend of mine. He ain't trying to take me out to dinner or nothing like that. He respects me as a comedian. Which before, he probably thought I was one of them chicks saying I do comedy, trying to get pregnant by somebody rich. Cause some girls do that out here. I had something worse happen with another comic. I decided not to name him. I'll call him Rumpelstiltskins. I knew him because of some of my friends opening for him when he went on the road. Hey, Rumpelstiltskins, I would love to open up for you. You should let me open up for you.
I can't take you on the road.
Why?
Unless you open up those legs, you can't go nowhere.
At first, I thought it was a joke, right? So the next time I asked him, he said the same thing. I was like, this motherfucker serious. So let me get this straight. Whoever's on the road with you, open up their legs for you. Is that what you're telling me?
I ain't no motherfucking faggot. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that you can't go nowhere. You're going to ruin my marriage.
Your type? You too cute and shit.
You gonna have to give up some pussy.
Obviously, that was a no-go. Then after that, I got a TV show and a movie. Now his manager wants to call me and ask me if I'll open up for him. And he wanted to pay me $500 for 15 minutes. Fuck that. Rumpelstiltskin was so shocked that I turned down the offer. He called me up himself. And I was like, a minimum of $2,500 for me to open.
Nigga, what is wrong with you? Don't nobody pay that much money for some goddamn comedy? Not a female.
I was like, yes, they do. That's what I get paid on a regular basis. And he was like, well, I guess you're going to be headlining this for yourself. And you can go on out there and headline for yourself. Will do. That's what I said to him. I said straight up, will do. You bet. And then I started headlining shows and stuff. And I did pretty good. I guess he heard about how good I did, so he called me.
Well, I just want to apologize. Nigga, you out here getting it. You really doing things. I want to apologize, okay? I was wrong the way I treated you.
I thought this was cool of him to admit he was wrong. Good for him. But I had to earn that respect. There was this other guy that pissed me off for a long time. Let's call him Crybaby. He's a comedian you've heard of. When I was starting off, I was like 22 years old. I met him at an open mic. He said I had promise, but I needed to hang out with more comedians to get funnier. I was like, cool, this guy's trying to help me. So he invited me to a taping of one of his shows for BET. Well, that's what he told me it was. I was thinking he was on the TV show. I get there, and it's not his show at all. He was just doing audience warm-up. After the show, he was all excited. So, what'd you think? I was like, I thought it was pretty interesting. It's cool. You see how I'm the man up there? I was like, you're not the man. You the audience warm-up. You warm up the audience. Why are you talking to me like that, bitch? Excuse me? Why you talking to me like that? You disrespecting me. You disrespecting me. What do you want from me?
Girl, you know what I want from you.
I do know what you want. And guess what? You're not my type. Your titties are bigger than mine. I'm not interested. It ain't never going nowhere. So you just need to chill. We comedians. And that's that. And he was like, man, fuck you, stupid bitch. I kind of laughed it off. I know his feelings was hurt, but whatever. But he and I were on the same club circuit at the time, and he was a bigger name than me then. So every time I seen him, for 5 years, he would bump me off for comedy shows. If I was supposed to go up next, he'd tell the manager of the club, no, I want to go up.